Okay, look, I've got a totally random question just to start off with, because I wanted to ask you this before I forgot. All right, how do you get the bucket to fly off the plank and land on your head? Because I saw the video, so hang on, what are the chances of actually landing on someone's head the right way round? How does that work?
That's a really great question. It's a combination of things.
Yeah.
Firstly, it's a lot of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it, really. You know, I have to say that because, trust me, we did a video for Anglia Television. They did a little article about us.
Yeah.
And we got one of the presenters to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We put them in both roles, either pushing the plank or catching the bucket.
Yeah.
So, firstly, you have to work out the balance point, so where you're going to push. So,
I've made a mistake here already, haven't I? Because this is an audio podcast, I should pretty much describe what it is. So basically, you've got a plank on a pivot, like a seesaw or a catapult. So you push one end down, and the bucket flies up and lands on someone's head.
Yeah, it's a bit different to that. You've got two trestles.
That's right. Yes,
and you actually walk the plank into position.
Wow.
So there's no way that it's hinged.
Yeah.
We carry the plank. We do a few gags with the plank first.
Yes.
And then we put the plank down on the trestles.
Yes.
Yeah. The trestles are two different heights. that's not that important. It's just part of the clown thing, I guess.
Yeah.
And the thing is, on the plank, and this is, you wouldn't believe what clowns go through. When we set the stage, the plank has to be set the right way up.
Yeah.
Firstly, when you pick the plank up, you have to pick it up exactly the right way.
Oh.
So it's on your shoulder. You do all the swings, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Yeah. You go to put the plank onto the trestles, and because you've picked it up the right way, you glance very briefly to your left, okay, and there's a little bit of tape.
Right.
And that piece of tape must line up with the bigger of the two trestles. So the big trestle's on the left, small trestle's on the right.
Right.
The other clown, meanwhile, has picked up the bucket and placed it on the trestle.
Yeah.
You pick up the wallpaper, which rolls down the trestle. So that sets the gag up. So one thing with foolhardy gags is everything has to make sense.
Yes.
Yeah. So you put the buckets on the plank for a reason.
Yeah.
The wallpaper's on the plank because you're going to paste the wallpaper, but it rolls down the plank.
Yes.
The clown goes to get the wallpaper. In the process of grabbing the wallpaper, pushes the plank, which, remember, I've said is perfectly positioned on this pivot point, which then throws the bucket into the air. That's stage one. Stage two, right? The bucket must have exactly the same quantity of water in it every single show.
Oh.
Because you've worked out, and this is the skill, I guess, how much pressure to put on the plank in order to make the bucket fly in the right trajectory.
Wow.
So in the bucket, we've also got a little mark, and that's where the water comes up to. Whatever, I never weighed it, but it's a specific point.
Yeah.
So then the bucket is now flying through the air. It's got to be a nice clean push so you don't twist the bucket in any way.
Yeah.
It's flying through the air. And then the third part of the equation is the clown who's getting the bucket, which was me. You've got a little bit of leeway. You can glance up. You don't want to. Ideally, it just lands on your head and you don't even see it.
Yeah.
But if necessary, you could move just fractionally to the left or the right.
Yes.
Just to make sure you're in the right position. Like when you're doing a bit of hat juggling.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could just maneuver yourself. No one would notice that. But ideally, you're in position and it just goes boom and lands on your head. That's the ideal scenario. We must have done that routine 1,000 times, easily 1,000 times. So I think we got it quite well.
Oh, that's brilliant.
I think the one you've seen on the YouTube clip, that'll be Joe Fall doing it.
All right,
the old clown who passed away, sadly. But I'm now doing the same routine with my son.
Wow.
Yeah, so we've kept the routine going. And if I'm honest, before me and Joe did it, Zach Olosky did it.
Okay.
He was another foolhardy clown. He was working with another clown on another gig. We had quite a few different gigs, so we had a few troops out. So Zach Olosky more or less learned pass that routine on, because we did a free-handed decorators with Zach, so that's when we picked the gag up of Zach, and Zach had learned it originally when he was with Jerry Cottles off another clown, so it gets passed along.
Yes.
And every time it gets passed along, it gets a little bit adapted, so I adapted it a little bit, because I really wanted it to be a pure accident.
Yes, that looks great.
Everything's got to make sense and appear to be a complete and utter accident. Nothing contrived. You know, that ruins a good clown routine. If it looks like you've contrived the gag. The gag, you know, you are Klux. Yes. You just got to let it happen.
That's brilliant. Yeah. I'm so glad they asked that question. That was a great answer. Alrighty, so this week we're talking to the amazing Mr. Cosmo Hardy. I interviewed him about 6 months into the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Now, Cosmo is one of the founders of the Fall Hardy Circus Troupe. Hey, how about this for a career? Build your own circus, gather your own circus troupe, design a new circus show every year, build up a kind of a circuit where you visit certain festivals annually, and carry on doing this for decades. What an amazing story. Let's go and talk to Cosmo Hardy. But first of all, a quick word from our sponsors, of course. I love juggling, I love circus, and the best place to get all things circusy related is oddballs.co.uk. I learned to speak English in 1972. I visited their shop, Oddballs, in the 1980s and built a whole career out of their props. And now they're online too, so go to oddballs.co.uk and get yourself some circusy, juggly, unicycly, bubbly related circus props. That's oddballs.co.uk. The link is in the description. All right, let's get back to this week's podcast with the amazing Mr. Cosmo Hardy. Let's go back to the beginning then. Did you begin clowning in the 1980s?
Yeah, we did. 1985.
Wow. Yeah. And so, what happened? What made you start clowning?
Gosh, wow, great question. There is an answer. When I was at the university here in East Anglia, I came up from Tottenham when I was 18. I wouldn't say I'd been the class fool, but one of my best good mates was one of the fools, and I guess I was his tag man. So I've been in a double act in the classroom, if you know what I mean, as you do. Then I got to Norfolk. We put on some festivals in Earlham Park here in Norwich. And a bunch of people rocked up called the Tibetan Ukrainian Mountain Troupe. I guess they're infamous, and they were one of the first sort of travelling alternative circus people.
Right.
They've got a website and everything as well. So we booked them. I checked them out. They're a fantastic bunch of guys, really phenomenal. I loved them to bits. I love what they did. Late night, crazy, crazy Frank Zappa-ish comedy.
Yes.
You know, it's theatre of the absurd. Lineage from another great clown, Michael Balfour and the Hazard Clowns. And a lot of them are still around. Phony Tony does the kids' field at Glastonbury, so all the Tibetans are still doing things. You know, Croissant Nerf had Sally and Glenn and Andy Cope doing all that. So I watched those guys. I thought, wow, what a great lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, so when I left university, instead of taking my degree and working for Mark Seddon and the Labour Party, because he'd asked me to be a researcher for him,
okay.
I thought, no, mate, I'm going on the road. I'm going to join the circus. So it really was, you know, literally I hit the road, bought a bus, went down, spent some time with the Tibetans, joined with Circus Croissant Nerf. Me and Joe Fall, the original Fall Hardys, started doing some just very simple routines. I think the first time we ever performed was at Strawberry Fair in Cambridgeshire. And it was a year of the World Cup, so probably I think it was 1986.
Yeah.
And I walked around.
Oh, 1986. That's the year of Maradona, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah. I just remember that because we had two gags. I had a balloon. No, Joe had a balloon. a burst balloon on a bit of string. He just walked around as a really sad clown. That was a walkabout. And I walked around saying England are going to win the World Cup. That was a gag. Yeah. That was a gag. Everyone knew it was a gag. But obviously I was dressed like a footballer and yeah. big knobbly knees. And, you know, it was all about the costume, I guess. We met, what was his name? Bo the Clown there.
Uh-huh.
We met a guy called Bo, lovely bloke, sold me a tightrope. He was brilliant because he chatted to us and he talked about clowning to us and he inspired us in many ways. And we watched his routines, loved them. So that's what kicked us off, really. And then we met up a guy called Mike, became Mike Folk. And that was at the end of that summer. So me and Joe had done a few gigs during the summer, nothing massive. By the end of the summer, we met Mike. And unbelievably, I mean, I used to be a tumbler when I was a kid. I was an acrobat and did stuff and learned, you know, did lessons. So I just taught Joe and Mike a whole tumbling routine.
Uh-huh.
And we did it at the Rough... a festival, a Barsham Fair. So we did. I said, "Come on, lads!" And in the afternoon, I taught them a tumbling routine. And by late afternoon, we were performing it.
Brilliant!
So it was a human juggling, taxis, aeroplanes, pyramids. I could do a mega split, so that I'd do a pyramid and drop from Ooh. Pyramid into splits.
Oh wow! Just,
you know, about a 3 foot drop. That's quite a trick. And then I could bounce back onto my feet as well, like a jazz split styling. Oh. Yeah, no, I can still do that. I can still do that.
Whoa.
And at the end of a show, I still do jazz splits and back to feet.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, touch wood. It's, I mean, I ain't done it all summer. Normally, I'll tell you what, you get to the end of the routine and your adrenaline's going, isn't it? You just done half an hour.
Yeah.
You're buzzing. You're loose. You've been running around like a nutter. So you've got the energy to do it. And now our accordion player, Wilson... We'll play a little tune. Me and Jack Luke could do a dance and then go boom straight into splits.
Lovely.
And every show, I mean, I'm 57 now, so every show, when it gets to that bit, I mean, Wilson's always looking at me to do it. Luke pauses to let me do it as part of the routine. And I'm thinking in my head, is this the one? Is this the last time I'll ever do this? 57, 58, 59, I'm hoping 60, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, we've got.
But as I said, you know, when we said at the start, obviously doing the Tai Chi,
yes,
which I do every day, and I'm going to do a lesson in an hour or so. That really helps keep you chilled out and keeps your body loose. So,
yeah.
So that I think that is, I would say that is the secret of my ability to still throw myself about a little bit. You know,
that's brilliant.
Other clowns I know have had to retire because they just couldn't do the physical stuff anymore.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Zachalowski, one of the old foolhardy clowns, he had to retire.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sad thing. We did the last season with him. We called it the Swan Song for Zach Swan Song. So we gave him a starring role in the show. He played about six different characters. It was hilarious.
Brilliant.
But that was his last season, you know.
Yeah. As an aside, that is an interesting point. If you're going to be a clown full-time for your whole life, it'd be pretty handy to also do something like Tai Chi or yoga on the side,
yeah,
because that's going to prolong your career. It's going to prolong the physical clowning, the really physical
side
stuff.
Of it, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of clowns that are not super physical, but even just the way that you need to move your body,
you need
a good mind body relationship.
Yeah,
a lot
of
the good clown schools do teach a lot of yoga and Tai Chi and Pilates and that type of movement-based exercises. I've taught at various drama schools.
Yeah.
I always do Tai Chi warm-ups when I'm teaching clown workshops for everybody, just to introduce them to the idea. I encourage people on drama courses to take up Tai Chi or yoga or anything. There's firstly, the physical side of it. Secondly, the mental side of it.
Mm.
When you're backstage, I mean, I've been backstage about to perform for royalty, you know.
Yes.
And you're really nervous. You're super nervous. Your mouth is so dry. You need to centre. You can't be having your brain going all over the shop, panicking. You've got to be totally centred. The more shows you do, the easier it gets. But, you know, at the beginning of your career, when you're trying to get those really mega prestigious gigs to get your name out there.
Which you haven't done before, so it'll be the first time. So
you've never done it. You know you've got a total confidence in your material, for better or for worse, I will say, in some cases. But you still got to overcome the nerves. So something like Tai Chi being centered is really good. Yeah. And being in a clown troupe helps, because we used to have a thing backstage, either if it was the clowns or if the whole circus troupe, obviously because the Foolhardies ran their own circus, we'd get all the 10 artists together backstage three or four minutes before a show, and we'd all touch our fingers together, you know, like E.T. Yeah, finger to finger, that's it, and just have a moment of silence. And, you know, if someone needed to say anything, they'd say something. But firstly, it's, you know, you're on the road together, and it's not always a bed of roses, so there might be a couple of bits of tension between people, for whatever reasons, you know, usually nothing serious. I can only remember a couple of serious bits of tension, but one, you need to put all that aside, because when you go on that stage, everyone, and we had, because it was a small show, so the whole show was an ensemble number, you had to trust everybody. Even if you might have had a little quibble about where'd you put the sledgehammer, you know, or was that you bashing into my caravan half pissed last night? I was asleep, you bastard. You know, you had to put that aside. So just what we called it, zomming in. So you could zom in finger to finger, get out there, professional, do the show, 100% do the show. Yeah. One time I even, God's truth, me and my wife were divorcing, So it was, there was tension there. We were being 100% professional the whole way through it, and we're still great mates. We're like brother and sister now. It was just we couldn't live together.
Yeah.
And we, the routine that we were doing, the Foolhardies, I was jumping off the top of a ladder. This was a routine we were doing from the Tibetans. Because me, Glenn, Nick and Joe were the original Tibetan, you know, became the Foolhardies from that little group of clowns, you know, doing a season together. And I jumped off a ladder into a bucket of water head first.
Yeah.
And Sam and Joe had to catch me last second.
Yes.
So you do a vertical drop down. If you don't catch it, I'm breaking my neck.
Yes.
So I'm divorcing my wife. She's got a So, you know, that's professionalism, to do that every single show, regardless of what might be going down between us.
Yes.
And we did it every show.
Yeah.
Whatever happened. Yeah. And then that happened for lots of different acts. You know, that I think that's really important.
I think you're right.
To be able to, you know, when you go into that ring, boom, that's it, you are what you are. You've got to be it 100%.
Yeah, I mean, even if you've done, like, also from another angle, if you've done the show hundreds and hundreds of times over the decades, you've got to remember that the audience is probably seeing it for the first time, so you've got to give them 100%, make it feel new for them. Yes.
Yeah, that is a true thing. And I think Buster Keaton was like a little... Joe Fall loved Buster Keaton.
Yes, I love him too.
So we took a few... You love Buster as well. Yeah. I'm a Charlie Chaplin.
I love Charlie Chaplin as well. I love Charlie Chaplin as well.
I do a Charlie Chaplin act.
I know, so you do.
Quite nice. Oh, you're doing that, right.
That's how I began my career as well. I began my career as a child. I got a gig as a Charlie Chaplin act. Yeah, in Singapore.
Oh, wow. Brilliant.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that in a minute. We'll get that soon.
Yeah, go for it. So, what was I saying? So, Buster Keaton, he tried to do one take on all his stuff because he wanted the pure emotion of the, of like the famous woman on the top of the train getting smashed by the water.
Yes.
So I always say to the, when we're rehearsing with the clowns, you know, often you break down into fits of laughter because you're having such a good time when you're rehearsing.
Yeah.
And then you're doing something for the first time, and the idea in your head is remember how you feel at that first moment.
Yeah.
When you're doing it. And then the first time you do it in front of an audience, and you're getting the laughs and it's all working well. Or say the first time, you know, it really works, which is usually about the 20th time you do it, maybe the 20th, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. To remember that feeling, to remember the timing that you were doing that was getting it. Because as you know, with clowning, it's all about timing.
Yes.
You know, you could be a second off and you'll miss the gag and the audience will miss the beat. It's like a bad piece of music.
Yeah.
You know, it'll grate on them and it won't work.
Yeah.
So then when you've come to do the show for, like I said, with the decorator's routine, the thousandth time is to keep that freshness.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, if people talk about the skill of clowning, forget the technical side. I could teach the technical side. I can teach an 18-year-old how to fall over, how to do a slip fall, how to develop your clown walk, clown character. That's all technical, yes. Stuff. And then you go on the inside stuff. But then you've got that other thing that's, in a sense, can it be taught? I don't know. It comes from experience, but it's being able to keep it fresh.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Keep that energy really fresh. You're not just going through the routine.
Yeah.
So for the foolhardies, like for my son Luke, and this summer, he can be a little bit lazy, Luke. He's an amazing talent, you know, seven ball clown juggler. Wow. There's not many of them around.
Yeah.
And he's developing really well as an August. But I say to him, you know, every season we need two new routines. Not one, two. Mm. Because a lot of our audience is a repeat audience, because they love to see us again. So we can't go out there and do the same routine again and again and again.
Yes.
You know, especially as the circuit we're on as well. You're going to get loads of new people, but if you know, when we set the circus up at Rocks and Barns, which is our usual first gig of this season before we tour, we're getting probably, I would say, 75%, 70% of the people have seen us before.
Right.
We're in Norfolk, our home county.
Yeah.
So everyone that knows us comes to see us. We can't do the same. So we make a new show. You know, one year, for 3 or 4 years, God, I must have been mad. We were doing two new shows a year. Two whole shows. Two whole new circus shows. We'd do one in April, one in August. Completely new show. That burnt me out, I must say. that burnt me out. In terms of ideas, I ran out of ideas, by year four. So by year five, I said, just one show every season, that'll do.
That was brilliant. Kidding. That was one of my questions. Yeah. It was like, I've just dropped all my questions. Hang on, come up. There we go.
Oh. Mind your head.
There we go.
Bonk.
One of my questions was, I looked at your stuff online. Of course, you've got a list of all the shows you've done. So it looks to me like you can do a new show each year, and then you can go to the same festival, but you've got a different show each year.
That's it.
And that means you can keep on getting re-employed year after year. I was going to say, it must be very hard, because in particular, say you're a juggler and they want a new routine each year. There's not much you can do, really. I could juggle this and I could juggle that. It's the same. But you've actually managed to make a whole new storylines, whole new plots, whole new characters.
Yeah, we have. I'm not a juggler, so but obviously I employed jugglers in the show.
Yeah.
So usually they're doing not dissimilar stuff. They're juggling five, fives, fives, five. But it could be costume can change, music changes, which completely changes the flavour of a routine.
Yeah.
You know, we've had steampunk, we've had rave, we've had Balkan music, so even using those three styles of music in three different shows, the juggling routine's going to have a different feel to it.
Yes.
And then of course the character, because we're a small ensemble, either six or ten, depends on the venue and the show. So our shows are all about the storyline,
Yeah.
So, for example, I mentioned Zach doing that the Swan Song year. So that year the show was called Prophecy Tour. Yeah, and it was all about the environmental disaster that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about the rich, the way they're behaving and how they'll abandon the working classes tomorrow if they get the opportunity.
Yeah.
I didn't quite say they're all into eugenics, but I've got a sneaky suspicion they are. But anyway, that aside, I mean, the Fools have always been a little bit political with a small p. So developing that show, because it had a storyline to it, everybody in the show, and Zach played six different characters.
Wow.
Everybody in the show had a different character.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played the same character throughout the show. Joe Fall came on in a few different guises. We had the Queen, because it was a royal year, so we served tea to the Queen, so we did the waiter's routine for the Queen. So we had a girl in a Queen mask. And then we had the Prophecy, so we had a guru. Whole routine with no legs when you had the rubber legs. That routine. And every single routine, that's the other thing with a, like, you know, like, every single routine has a reason for coming on stage. Yeah, so it's not ringmaster routine, ringmaster routine. There's a flow to it.
Yes, yes, yes.
And there's
yes.
a storyline that runs through it. So one year, for example, I was trying to, I mean, it's a classic thing, trying to woo the trapeze artist. So all the different acts are helping me.
Yeah.
So they're encouraging me to do things. So they're either showing me their act or telling me things that maybe. So as you saw that list of shows, Subterranean was set. I mean, sometimes me and Joe would be sitting in the office and we'd just sit and write a show over the winter.
Yeah.
We'll be inspired either by music. We were into a certain type of music that year.
Yeah.
So that would be a good starting point. With the Subterranean show, one of the first circus shows, I think the first one we did was the Moulin Rouge, the ever almost ready windmill show, which was a take on the Moulin Rouge. But with Subterranean, we'd purchased off of the Theatre Royal here in Norwich some scenery that fitted our tent. We chopped it, cut it up, but it fitted the tent. So if you see pictures of our tent, you see we've got scenery in the background,
yeah,
which we get repainted every year. I mean, it's £1,000 in itself plus. So the Subterranean, we inherited that scenery and this massive, beautiful rat throne. A guy called Paul Hiversay, who was an artist, he came and painted this underground scene for us.
Yeah.
On the scenery. And then, because we wanted to use the rat throne. So basically the idea was there was this radioactive people living underground. They dumped radiation canisters under the ground. People on the subway, living in the subway, because people do live in subways, had been infected. And this hapless character goes down, that was me in the show, into this world and meets the Rat Queen, and Joe played her stooge and stuff. So I started the routine by doing a tightrope routine on an angled tightrope, yes, as if I'm descending. Yeah?
Yeah.
You slide down a tightrope, so I was like I was descending into this realm.
Yes.
On the tightrope, yeah. So that was a dark show, and we God, blimey, setting that, because we'd move, like, sometimes twice a week with the show, mostly once a week.
Yeah.
And we had the tent, but before we lifted the tent, we had to lay out this, we built this huge net. We bought a load of camouflage nets, joined them all together, so it was 60 by 40, which is the size of the tent roof.
Yeah,
and we'd have to lay that out first,
yeah,
then put the tent on top of it, and then lift the whole thing, and then pull it all out on the inside. So when someone walked in, and honestly, kids walked out the tent, they were that scared. Because when they walked into the tent, they didn't see the roof of a tent. They saw a camouflage net with stuff hanging off of it, broken baby dolls and, you know, weird stuff, and the rat throne, and the darkness that we created in there.
Wonderful.
You know, really created quite a, I love that. I love that tent. I really love that decoration. So, you know, you're talking about shows and changing the show. Well, if someone comes to my tent and sees Subterranean 1 year, and we only ran it 1 year, shows could have ran for 4 or 5 years if we'd have, I don't know, that's what we did. We were bloody crazy. And the next year we built, repainted the scenery, put the giant brain in it, a UV brain on the backdrop scenery, which we took to Glastonbury that year. And Joe, who was a great carpenter, he built a door which was circular, like a hobbit door, but it was a spaceship door.
Door.
So the audience entered the tent through a spaceship door.
Yeah.
And went in. Lovely. So it was brilliant. I loved that. And then obviously they went into the tent and it was like a spaceship. Inside.
Wow.
So that year we just got up loads of old computers and scattered them around, because again so immediately you might be doing, and trust me when I say that you know there are only three gags, when you're doing the clown routines you're using similar ideas about, you know, slapstick, do this, do that, but you're putting them in a different context,
so
the audience doesn't quite see it. But you know, we might do the same acro move in 4 or 5 shows, but in a different context.
Yeah.
And because they've gone in and they've already been, wow, it's a spaceship, or the year before, wow, it's like underground, but they're not they won't, and then they see the show, they get so involved with the characters and the storyline, which has to have its conclusion, its blow off at the end, and then they're fine after that.
I'm very interested in this because what we do, I mean, what I do and probably what you do, I probably do it for fun as a hobby, but it's also a career, and we have to make enough money to live off it, and we have to be able to do something. You have to be able to do something new each year. So, is this your business? Your business survives. Is it based around the festivals in the UK? You take your circus to different festivals.
For the Foolhardies, it's always been just say yes and we'll do it.
Yeah.
So it is festivals. That's my ideal scenario. We're a family show. We're not like so even at a festival, we're not the late night show.
Yeah.
We do late night cabarets, but I'll book in other acts for that.
And yeah.
We have got material that we use. We used to pluck out pubic hairs with pliers and stuff like that. So we have got material for late night cabaret, but essentially a lot of festivals love the family element.
Yeah.
So we're saying to a festival, if you book us, we're going to give you that family element during the day.
Yeah.
We're going to give you a show, and what we say is a show with edge.
Yes.
So anyone can come and see it. Any kid can come and laugh their heads off. Any adult can watch it, have a good laugh, but also see a little bit of edge in there, a little bit of you know, with the Prophecy Tour.
Yeah.
You know, the opening scene from the Prophecy Tour was I came on stage in a cardboard box. Big one. It was as big as me.
Yeah.
I walk into the middle of the stage, a little sign pops out, the end is nigh.
You know? Yes.
And basically, it's the ostrich with its head in the sand.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to symbolise, you know.
Yeah, so you've got something for adults to think about as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. The adults can think about it. And some shows were more emotional, like trying to woo the trapeze artists.
Yeah.
So it's another, we're playing on human emotions. Another show, which I enjoyed a lot, was like it was a time travelling shed. we had two time travelling ones because I was into quantum mechanics at the time. I heard about a particle that can go back in time. So, yeah, we had a time travelling shed, which went through time and just did a reprieve of loads of Fuhardi routines.
Yeah, that's good. Nice, that's idea. A clever idea.
The year
yeah.
before that, the clown was trying to go back in time to save his love who died.
Yeah.
And in the so then, because I'm working with my son, the pair of us, we were both the same person.
Oh, that's clever, yes. We must never meet.
Which gave us the excuse to do the mirror routine.
Oh, yeah, lovely.
You know?
Yeah.
So what I'm saying, there's a routine. That routine is, you know, 100 years old.
Yeah.
So Zach and Joe had done that routine originally in the Moulin Rouge show because he's trying to tie himself up in the show. So then I grabbed it again. So a show from 2000 or whatever it was, five, I think. That was, and then come 15 years later, I say to Luke, actually, I know this routine. It's in my head. I'm going to do let's do the mirror.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do the mirror. But how do we do the mirror? Well, obviously, we made this time travelling, the two characters who are each other.
Yes.
He's a younger version of me. We had exactly the same costumes on.
Yeah.
So, you know, mirror routine, perfect. Boom, boom, boom. So we put the same routine in a different context and given it a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not just happened. It's not, here's the clowns, they're going to do the mirror routine.
No.
So what? Yeah, no. Here are the clowns, oh, there's a mirror, and he doesn't want to be seen by the other clown.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he smashed the mirror, obviously. He moves the mirror and smashes it in the process, which sets the routine. With the same blow-offs, you know, the egg in the pocket and the water, all the same blow-offs.
Yeah.
All the same gap at the end, yeah.
But you've got a different story. A different
context
theme.
And a reason, so it flows, you know.
Yeah. Brilliant.
And then using modern technology, so a strobe at the end for the chase sequence.
Wow, lovely.
You do a load of gags there with slow motion, slow-mo, can't you?
Yeah. Pretending to move in slow motion with the strobe.
Yeah.
Love it.
So, doing the festivals, of course, but also, you know, if someone rings us up for a booking, just sending the clown troupe to a booking.
Yeah.
So sometimes at a smaller festival, it would just be the clowns go along to do it. Or The foolhardy circus, we call it the foolhardy circus troupe, to be honest.
Yeah.
Rather than the foolhardy, it used to be the foolhardy clowns, but I've metamorphosized and we hardly use any makeup now, if I'm honest.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely do we even have red noses on.
Yeah.
So we really are clown, we're comedy characters.
Yeah.
More than, and that happened, well, Joe passed away. So and then Luke and Wilson, I was working with them. We was already working, the four of us, but then Joe passed away, so it shifted us over a bit. That young energy coming in, they didn't really want to use the red noses. I mean, Wilson looks stupid anyway. he's a funny guy. You know, he looks funny. He wears funny clothes. He doesn't even have to put a costume on when he turns up. He just rocks up to, you know, we all meet at the truck or something. And he'll rock up and I'll look at him. And so I used to think, where's his costume? And I suddenly I'd noticed the jacket he had on and the trousers were a bit short and the shoes didn't quite fit. And I realised, actually, no, he's wearing his costume.
Wow.
Yeah, whereas me and Luke will change. Yeah. So yeah, not even using the noses, really. I mean, sometimes yes, I'll get a commission off somebody, like Strangers Hall Museum commissioned me for Christmas. So then I had a nose for that show.
Yes.
Because that was the show. It needed it, and it was what I was doing, you know. So it does depend. You've got to be so flexible. I've got an attic room here upstairs, converted attic, which is basically the prop stroke costume room.
Yeah.
Have you heard of the Mighty Boosh?
Yes, I have, yeah.
They're a comedy game, yeah. Yeah. Well, they called us up and they wanted to hire the tent and they wanted to hire three of the acts.
Wow.
For a movie they made called Curtains.
God.
So Julian came to my house with a couple of people from Wardrobe to choose the costumes. So I marched them up there. I said, "What's up there in the attic?" And he's a big lad. I said, "I hope you can get through the big act." So they went up there and honestly, the costume bloke was like, you know, he'd have bought it all off me.
He loves it.
Because I must have 200 plus costumes up there.
Wow.
And some of them, I've got eight of it. Because I'd commissioned eight front house jackets because I've got people on the staff.
Yeah.
Or when the dome in London closed down.
Oh, yeah.
And they did the opening show for the dome, the O2. We bought up all the stock. We've bought up loads of costumes.
Brilliant.
Theatre Royal gets rid of a show, I go and buy the costumes.
Wow, that's amazing.
Get rid of these costumes. And I'm loath to get rid of them. I really struggle.
You must have a big attic.
It's the size of the house.
Yeah.
So it's all the floor plan of the house is the attic. There's two rows, two racks of whatever you call it.
Two
clothing rails. And then about four boxes tucked away behind them.
Yeah.
So, for example, there are four firemen's costumes.
Yeah.
1980s firemen's costumes. Because we did the fireman's routine, you know, the burning house, which was a Buster Keaton gag.
With the falling house.
With the falling house. We built one. So I was living on Jex Road. I had this mad neighbour. He was an absolute fruitcake.
Yeah.
And I told him what I was planning. He said, "Oh, I'll make it for you."
Oh.
You know what? He did.
Wow.
He made me a falling house. He charged me pennies for it.
Brilliant.
He did it out of love, which was extraordinary.
Again, for people who are listening, this is the classic act where he's standing in front of a house. The whole front of the house falls on top of him. But luckily, he's standing right where the window is, the open window. So he's totally unharmed.
That's right, yeah. And luckily, there's no glass in the window.
There's no glass in the window, yes. That's quite important.
Yeah. So we built one of those. Our neighbour built it. Then we've got it. It's in the back of the truck. And this year, we were going to use it. So we've used it intermittently over the years.
Yeah.
For various reasons. Originally, it was literally the burning house routine.
Yeah.
With the two firemen.
Yeah.
And my ex-wife up in the window screaming, you know, like Coco used to do. And then it metamorphosized. We didn't use it for a long time. We did get some street gigs with it, so we worked out a mechanism whereby we could have it on the street.
Wow.
Yeah, lots of sandbags and some hinging system and some scaffolding behind, obviously, to hold it so it don't fall. And again, the timing on that's crucial because someone's got to be backstage to loose the catch.
Yeah.
When you're in position. And we got it to the point. So and originally, we'd just have a little mark on the ring mat.
Yeah.
So we'd set the tent up, laid a ring mat, yeah, make sure it doesn't move. So we put tags on it so we could stake it down.
Yeah.
Then when the house, drop the house, stand in the, and we did it with two. We didn't do it with one.
Wow.
So I think we saw Buster do it with one. So we said, oh, we're going to do it with two of us. Me and Joe hugging each other. Only one time did he get a scratch on his back. So we did that. And then we got to the point where we didn't have to mark it anymore.
Yeah.
We could literally know exactly where to stand just by eye. So that way the audience could never even see a mark on the ring mat.
Wow.
So then it would come down. So then we did it. Then we resurrected the routine for the show. What I just said with the mirror routine.
Yes.
So the end of that show, the timelines get crossed. I do meet myself.
Yeah.
Because I've gone in time to save the love of my life and I do meet myself. I do save her, by the way.
Well done. Good job.
And then that gives the excuse when the timelines cross, there's a massive explosion. That gives the excuse because we'd changed the house, didn't look like the house. We'd decorated it like steampunky.
Okay.
Like a giant time machine, Jules Verne style-y. So then when it collapses and we're in the
beautiful.
So we did that with Chris, and then I did it with Luke, and obviously we've done it with Joe as well.
Yeah.
So we've done that routine three times.
Mm-hmm.
We're about to resurrect it this year as well. Do it again with a different storyline.
Yeah.
And I must say, as far as the audiences are concerned, it's one of their favourites.
Oh, it's amazing.
There is a split second where it's,
an amazing thing.
The explosion and everything.
In front of a house falling down on top of someone. Surely they're going to get hurt. Nope, they're standing right exactly in the right place so the house falls around them.
Yeah,
amazing.
Exactly.
It must be incredible to see it live. Wow.
It's incredible to do it, mate.
Yeah, I bet.
It's buzz every time. Yeah. I did put a reporter in it once.
Really?
A girl, she came to do a little article about us, and I said, have a go, I said. I stood with her. I said, look, if I get it on the head, I'm taller than you, so I'll break the fall. She did it. She screamed. It was cool.
Oh, brilliant. Listen, do you have to go in a few minutes to do your Tai Chi class?
I've got a Tai Chi class at 10 o'clock. I don't know what the time is now.
So now it's 10 to...
10 to 10.
Yeah, so have you got to go in a few minutes?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
So look, like I predicted, I've got through my first question. I have about 965 more questions. So we will definitely get in touch again. I've got so much already, but there's a few things that I better ask now before you go. If people want to contact you or find out about you, what's the best place for them to find you on the internet?
I would say just find our Facebook page.
Yeah.
And message us via that.
And your Facebook page is
Full Hardy Circus Arts.
There you go.
Or
brilliant.
Go to our web page. Go to the web where there's videos on there, photographs, all the different bits of our work, and then they can email me from that page.
All right, brilliant.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. Right, you've got to go, haven't you?
Just been told my student. Right. Hey man,
I'll talk to you on Thursday. Yeah.
Yeah. Groovy.
Take care, buddy.
Yeah. Cool.
Bye bye. Oh, well, that's Cosmo Hardy. Well, what an amazing story. What an amazing guy. And coming out very shortly will be part two of my interview with Cosmo Hardy. And, now to keep my costs down, not every single episode is available all the time as an online downloadable podcast. But they are all available on my website, thebigbenshow.com/podcasts. So if there's an interview you really want to listen to, just go to my website and listen there. And, if like me, you're fascinated by all the tips and the info and the names mentioned in this podcast, if you want to see some videos and see some photos and check out some websites, well, there's detailed footnotes on my website as well. So go to thebigbenshow.com/podcast and check it all out. Well, actually, let's be honest, it's basically a link to a YouTube video, okay? Because YouTube is free. All right, I'll talk to you again in a moment, in a week or so. I will get out the episode part two of Cosmo Hardy. All right, take care. Stay safe.
I did loads of lockdown videos. One of them, I got this little mini house, a little kid's house.
Yeah.
And I put all my costumes out, and I did the, you know, the mini gag where you come out of a mini, like 20 people.
Oh, yeah.
I did it, and we called it End of Lockdown, and 20 different me's came out of this house.
Oh, lovely.